Father, we thank you for this time that we can come together to learn your words and how we can apply them to our life. We ask you to enlighten Dr. Jim, put the words in his mouth that you want us to hear. We really thank you for taking care of us. We ask you to forgive us our sins that we commit and to continue to guide us on learning your wisdom and your will. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Let's go to your Hebrew alphabet, and we're going to look at it one more time. And I want you to look at it in a different aspect than you have before. A little bit. See, I went and read this whole book all over again. It's, I think 600 pages, maybe. Yeah, 600 pages. Close to 600 pages. And as Marilyn was taking her class the other day, I decided to read my Gesenius Hebrew Grammar again. And I had a ball playing with it, because so many things I had just got into the cobwebs of my memory. I think that's the way to spell it in Greek. It either has an omicron or an omega there. Acrophone, acrophone, acrophone. That's what I've been trying to teach you in this. The sounds are like, they're ancient symbols. The Hebrew alphabet is an alphabet of ancient sounds and symbols. There are so many letters in here. There's so many of it came from Phoenician and different languages. Let's look at this one more time now and keep this in mind, okay? And I want you to do you have this alphabet? Yeah, that's that alphabet right there. Let me put that up to the camera so they can see what I'm talking about out there. In the wetland, right there, that's the Hebrew alphabet, and all the different, what we call evolution of the Hebrew alphabet. And also this is Gesenius Hebrew Grammar, which is like the grandfather of all grammar. Put that on the camera also. They've got some of the oldest writings. Now, the wonderful thing about when Gesenius Hebrew Grammar was written, you have to realize it was before they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, I know you're not going to, the Hebrews will not say this, but what we call the Hebrew, the Aleppo text and all that, you know, which is, how old is the Aleppo text? How old is the Aleppo text? It was about 900 to 1000 AD, okay? That's a long time, this side of the Old Testament, okay? Now, as you look at this, the Hebrew alphabet, in your first little column there, it goes back to about 800 B.C. Do you see that? 800 years before Christ. And then we have from the 5th to the 9th century, the second one there. And then we have about 700 B.C., and then you have the coins, that it was used on the coins, and then you have the Samaritans inscriptions, and then you have Old Aramaic, and the weights and measures, the transcriptions that they use, the in Egyptian cursive. Okay, now, this is Old Aramaic. And then we have Old Hebrew, Aramaic. See the difference over there? Early, the square characters from the 4th to the 5th, from the 1st to the 4th century A.D. That's A.D., after Christ, all right? And then we have the Babylonian. You know, what were they doing there in the Babylonia? What were they doing over there in Babylonia, Brother Roger? You know?
Writing the Talmud.
Writing the Babylonian Talmud and the Mishnah. All right, now we have the rabbinical writings, and then we have the cursive writings, which is pretty much modern. Most of the modern Hebrew are writing Sephardic. It's not really biblical Hebrew at all. It's Sephardic. The biblical Hebrew, there's different characters that the Sephardic is something that, well, if you get Hebrew Bibles, it's hard to get a good Hebrew text where you can tell one letter from the other, because they transpose them from one letter. They'll take a hey and just use it and put that in it. I mean, they'll take a cough and put the pay in there. All right? And they're using the same letter. And a modern Hebrew is like this. Okay? Now, the pay in biblical Hebrew is longer than the cough. You understand? Because it's a mouth with a tongue in it. Okay? And here's a cough like this. And then when you get to the letters, you can't tell one from the other. And then the finals. Okay? Now, how many consonants are there in the Hebrew language? 22 consonants in the Hebrew language. That's because sin and shin are doubled. Now, the modern Hebrew, how many do they say it is?
Well, you know, like about 29.
Yeah. That's not biblical Hebrew. Okay? Because it just isn't. But that's the modern Hebrew. Now, the modern Hebrew, in the history of the Hebrew language, the modern Hebrew is more like the biblical Hebrew than any other time. But yet, the grammar, they are lost in their own grammar. Their grammar is totally different from the old grammar, okay? Now, let's go back and let's look at some of these letters, okay? The Aleph, okay? The Aleph. Now, remember, we're studying the acrophone, the acrophonics. And what that means is that these letters literally meant something. Okay? Now, the oldest form of the Hebrew Aleph is like this in ancient times. It's a round circle with a little loop on top, which was a cow's head, which means Rosh. It means head or Rosh. Okay? The Aleph. The Aleph and the Tau. Jesus was the Aleph and the Tau and what else? And the Alpha and the Omega. In the Hebrew Bible, why do you think John called him the Alpha and the Omega in the book of Revelation? It doesn't make sense. But what was he doing? He was referring to the Aleph and the Tau of the Old Testament. That was a Hebraism also. A Hebraism also. So we have the Aleph. And that's the ox's head. And this is what we call acrophonics. Acrophonics or acrophone. Okay? I just wrote it up there in Greek, but because that's where it came from. And then we have the Beit. The first one is an ox or a aleph. We're doing the Hebrew alphabet. And then the second one is Beit. Now, what does a Beit mean? Beit. House. Okay? House. It's Beit. House. I always... And this is something else they'll take and they'll borrow... The characters on the Hebrew alphabet and they're printing and you can't tell one from the other. And there's easy to make the mistakes in it, Brother Roger. You've been copying some Hebrew. Mistakes. Okay, the Beit always put a heel on your Beit. That means house. Okay? Bet is house, isn't it? Bet is house in Hebrew. All right, now the Gimel. The Gimel. Look at the Gimel. I always put a heel on that, and I make it like this. All right, now you've got the knee. It's like that also. So it looks close. And they will interchange many times. You can't tell one from the other in some of the script. Now, the Gimel, what does that mean? What does that mean? Remember what that means? The character of a camel. The character of a camel, okay? Now look at the word Daleth. Daleth. Here's the Hebrew word Daleth. Daleth. Now that means what? Door. But what kind of a door?
A frame, door frame?
Not really.
No.
These are all long, sprawling tents that they had, weren't they? Remember the long, sprawling tents? And you had a door in it? And what they did is they took it and they folded the flap back. That door is the door of a tent flap. It's like a door, but it's the door of a tent flap folded back. Look at it now. Does that look more like the tent flap folded back? All right. That's where it's coming from. That's the acrophonic. And then we have the hay. 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 The hay looks like this. All right. Now that is a H sound, okay? But what is it? What is the hay? Huh? Window. A window. All right. That's a window. A window. Okay. A window. I'm bound to find one of these things will write sooner or later. Hay is a window. All right. And that's a hay sound. All right. The hay sound. Ha. And then let's look at this other one. Here we have a wow. Now, Gesenius will tell you that the modern pronunciation of the Hebrew language came from Germany. It didn't come from the Hebrew. It came from the German Jews that so influenced. We have Christmas. You know, people celebrate Christmas today. Christmas is Hanukkah, is what it is. And Christmas came from Germany. The German Jews were celebrating all that, and the Lutherans and whatever over there, they liked the celebration of it, so they started putting trees with candles on them, which was basically a tree instead of a menorah, you know, and all of that. You know, this is what they did to substitute, and they gave gifts to each other for 8 days, you know, and all of this. That's where it all came from. In World War I, it really spread all over the world after World War I, in the trenches of World War I. All right, hey, now way, wah, wah, wah. Now, today it's called what? Ba. Why did the Jews call Wa-Ba today?
Because of Volkswagen.
Because the Germans can't say W's. They don't know how to say a W, so it's a Ba. Now, the Jews have got all kinds of explanations of why they do that. It's different, but that's the real truth. This guy was writing this book when it was taking place. He saw what was going on. This is Gesenius Hebrew grammar. All right, he saw it happening back in the the century before, the 1700s and 1800s. Okay, the man lived a short life, but he did a lot. Gesenius was one of the greatest Hebrew scholars of all time. Okay, the wow. Now that is a reaping hook. All right, a scythe. It's also sometimes they had it in ancient times, even as a weapon. Okay? We're going to find another weapon pretty soon. Okay? But this is the wow sound, the wah, wah, wah. And then we have the word Zion. Zion. The Zion. Now that one there looks like a club with a head on it, doesn't it? Zion. That's your Z sound. Zion. All right, and that one there is a weapon, a stick with a club on the top of it. All right, and then we have the word Cheth, and that is just like this one, except it's closed. It's square. Square. I'm shaking so bad I can hardly write anymore. Cheth, Cheth, Cheth. And where did that one come from? What was that? A fence. That's a fence. All right? Like fence post. One to the other here. See, like that? Fence post. Fence post. Okay? Fence. All right, now we have a snake. A teth. This teth. The old Hebrew would draw a snake. A snake's head, and his body would curl around, and his tail inside. That's what the tape is. Now, it's changed a little bit today, okay? But that's the way it was. I still write it like that because then it's distinct from anything else. It's distinct from a psalmic. All right? So now we have a teth, and then we have a yod. Yod. Over here. Yod. Now, what is the sign of the yod? There we go. You got your yod out there. All right? Put your hand up like this. That's yod. All right? That's yod. All right? And that's the hand. Like that. And then we have a kaf. 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 Which they use the same letters in their printing as they do the bait and the pay. The kaf is shorter in form. And, of course, it can have a doggy slain ear 40 inside of it, see? Kaf. What is a kaf? What does that mean? Put your hand like this. Open hand. Open hand. Okay? And a kaf is also got a silent, I mean, it's also got a final, doesn't it? How many finals are there in Hebrew? How many final letters? Five final letters. How many final letters are there in Greek? How many final letters are there in Greek?
Zero.
Huh?
Zero.
One.
One.
Yeah. The sigma. Yeah. How many final letters are there in English?
Not many lately, but...
There is one final letter in English, which ended up being the final letter became the letter inside. Congress. If you look in your old, was printed before 1800, all of the English printing, there was a final S and an S. That's not Congress. That's Congress. The letter S in Old English looked like an F. And here we have a final. We have a S and a final S. Okay? Now we dropped it after 1800, but English does have a final in it. Even though we don't use it anymore. Actually, the final is it, period. All right. Now the cough. The cough has a final. And the kaf final is basically like that. Okay? And basically it's the same as the... They use the same letter as the kaf and the pay as your final letters in Hebrew. Today.
Pastor Jim.
Yes.
What was that used for?
What?
That final. What was it actually used for? It was only used in that one reference.
Here?
Yeah.
This is how English was printed up until 1800,
well,
period.
I actually, since you did it, I remember seeing
it. Yeah, you see it in the you see it in the Constitution.
Well, why? What I'm asking is, why did they do that?
This is the way it had been since English began. Until 1800, English had a final S in it. Now we don't, after 1800. Actually, we do in the English language, but we don't use it anymore.
What was the purpose of it?
That's just the way it was. This, like Greek, has a final. The sigma in Greek has a sigma and a final sigma. Their final sigma now, we see it as RS. RS came from that. Okay? The Hebrew has five finals. Okay? Five different finals. Let's go a little bit further. Of course, now Greek, the capital letters or the uncial letters are like all capitals. And you'll see in history that they change just a little bit. Let's go on now a little bit further now. And now we have the lament. The lament. Remember, this is a acrophonics. The lament. What does a lament look like to you? It meant something. No. A whip. A whip. It's a whip. All right, a whip. That's what it was, a whip. Let's go on a little bit further now. Now the mem. Now there's two mems. Here's your final mem in Hebrew. And then the other one looks like this. Okay? Two mems in Hebrew. All right? And what does mem, where'd that come from? Meh. Meh is water. Waters. 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 Okay? Waters. All right, man. Shem, and then we have Neen. The Neen, we have two Neens. We'll have a Neen like that, and then we have a final Neen like this. All right? Two Neens. The Neen in the Word and the final Neen. Okay? Neen and Neen. All right? And what does it mean? That's a fish. A fish. You have a fish. All right? Fish have always meant a lot to the Jews, haven't they? Fish mean a lot to the Jews. All right? And now we have a somic. A somic. Somic I draw like this so it does not look like the others at all, and it more corresponds to the ancient somic. All right? See, it doesn't look like this or whatever. Or some of them you'll see them printed and they just look like that. You don't know whether that's a somic or a mem. Period. So I put my mem like this so you can see the difference in it so it doesn't touch there. And then my somics are like a triangle. So you can tell them the difference. That way, when you read my writing, I remember Cindy one time, she said, I can read your writing in Greek and I can't read the other writings. I can read your writing in Hebrew, but I can't read the text. Because I make it different. I make it on purpose different. So you can tell the difference in it. And then we have the word ayin. Ayin. Ayin in Greek. Ayin. Ayin. Now the ayin. What about this ayin business? What is it? It's got two eyes. Modern Hebrew doesn't put the eyes on the ayin. Without the eyes on the ayin, well, you don't have an ayin. You got to have eyes on the ayin because that's what it means, eyes. Ayin. Ayin. And then pay. Here's pay. I leave mine a little deeper. Leave it a little deeper. Now, pay means what? Mouth. Why is this little thing there? That's the tongue. Like that. Every time you see the face, see somebody sticking their tongue out at you. All right? Now, we have two sounds for this also. The pay has a PH sound, and it has a strong P sound. If it has this little bit in the middle of it, that's strong. That's a P sound. If it doesn't have the ditch, you've got a PH sound. Is this helping you guys any at all? A little bit? Okay. And that means mouth. Okay. And then we have the word sadhe. Sadhe. That's a TS sound. Sadhe. Now it looks like... That's what it looks like that. That's in the word. At the end of a word, it's like this. That's your final sadhe. Now the modern Hebrew just makes it an S. But it's actually got a TS sound. The word say ha, the modern Hebrew, when they talk about the earth is what? That's like that, isn't it? Hmm? All right. Ar, now, the modern Hebrew will say aris, aris. But it's aris. Ha aris. When you have a definite article in front of it, ha aris. Say ha aris. Modern Hebrew would be ha aris. Just an S sound. Okay? I remember when I started teaching Hebrew. Now, this many of you don't know this, but this is really neat. I'm kind of known as a Hebrew scholar and Greek scholar from here to there. Okay? And I started putting these classes out, and there was a way to... There was a little thing that you can get on the internet, go on, and you can read the Hebrew. It's supposed to be Biblical Hebrew. Well, it came out, and it began just like modern Hebrew. And after I did about 50 or 60 classes, all of a sudden they changed the pronunciation of the Hebrew to the Biblical Hebrew. The way I was pronouncing it. It wasn't ha-aritz, ha-aritz. And it wasn't wa, it wasn't va, but it's now wa. I don't know who did that, who caught up on it, but they found it someplace. You go read all the Hebrew grammar, it's just going to tell you the same thing. Okay? All right, let's go a little bit further now. Now we got sadhe, that's a TS sound. And then we have the word kof, kof, kof. Now there's two origins of this, kof, all right? The kof, I got to erase a little something here. We haven't got any much Bible tonight, we're doing all this stuff. Here's your kof, right like that. Say kof. 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 That is like a Q sound. Like a Q sound. This is like a K sound. This kof is like a K sound. And this one's like a Q sound, okay? This kof now, there's two origins of this word. Most of the people say it's like the back of a head. But there's also another one in ancient Hebrew. What do you think that might be?
Shepherd's staff.
How about if you put a string in there, tie a string in it, what would it be? A needle with an eye. A needle with an eye. The eye of a needle. Okay? The eye of a needle. All right? The eye of a needle. So it's either the back of the head or the eye of the needle. Now we come to resh. Resh. And we know what resh is. Resh. All right? What's resh? Head. All right? That's head. Period. There's no description. Disgruntledness about that. And now we have this letter of the Hebrew alphabet right here. Looks like a pitchfork. A little offset in the middle, but it looks like a pitchfork. Now there's only one of them. One of them has an SH sound, and one of them has an S sound. Now Hebrew has how many S's? It has three S sounds, but it would have four if the Sontae was. Alright, but that's a TS sound. So we have Somic and we have Sin and Shin. Alright? Sin, Shin. I mean, Shin, Sin. If you've got this dot over one side of it, it's an SH sound. If it's over the other side of it, it is a SI sound. And then if it's got a dot in here, what is it? It's a double sound. Shishi. Shishi. Alright. And then we have Tau. The ancient Tau was like a cross. Alright, some of them are like this a long time ago. But the ancient Tau was a cross. Like that. Now it is like this. The modern Hebrew is like that. The ancient Tau was like that. You can go back and look at it. Alright, you got that down? Acrophonics. What does acrophonics mean? What does acrophonics mean? This is a test. Brother Mike, acrophonics.
Acrophonics is the letters represented by animals or
symbols.
Symbols that we use.
That's right. Almost all ancient languages, even Greek, were acrophonic in some way in their origins. Okay? Now let's go to Exodus, the 16th chapter, and verse number 27. Exodis 16:27. Sharon, do you have the Amplified Bible? Would you come and read from about 21 through 27 for us?
Sure.
Get us up to par where we are right now.
They gathered it every morning, each as much as he needed, for when the sun became hot, it melted. And on the sixth day, they gathered the twice as much bread, two omers for each person. All the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses. He said to them, "The Lord has said, tomorrow is a solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake and boil what you will bake and boil today. All that remains over, put aside for you to keep until morning." And they laid it aside till morning, as Moses told them, and it did not become foul, neither was it wormy. And Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you shall find none in the field. And 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there shall be none." And on the seventh day some of the people went out to gather, but they found none.
All right. People have a hard time doing what God wants them to do, don't they? These people, you have to realize that Israel had been in Egypt how long? 400 years. Okay, they'd been down there and they'd been practicing heathen practices. Okay, they'd been practicing heathen practices. According to the book of Jasher, they had had the Sabbath off originally. And according to the book of Jasher, the tribe of Levi never did do manual labor there. They were gold and silversmiths. They were the ones that, the artisans. The rest of the tribes, finally, and how they got them out there, according to Jasher, was that he said, come out here and we'll pay you so much for this month's wages. And they went out there and they paid them for the month's wages. And then they went out there and they said, well, we'll give it to you the next month. And finally, they got to where they didn't pay them at all. They just began to give them their food rations. Well, Levi never settled for that. They never did go along with that. And that's these great big giant, you know, the monuments and everything that they found. Many, for 400 years, the Aaron's sons, the Levites, had made all of that gold and silver stuff in the mummy tombs and all that stuff. That's what they did. Okay? So now, God is dealing with them, trying to wash out paganism out of them. And to wash out their desires of food that they had down in Egypt. They had to learn how to eat again. They had to learn how to eat kosher, so to speak. God was going to give them some kosher rules. All right? What are some of the modern things that we eat that the Jews do not eat? Huh?
Dairy products and meat.
They won't eat dairy products and eat meat together. They'll eat cheese. If you could take to the Mishnah and the Talmud, you go back there, and they eat meat, and they eat milk and cheese and everything. But they'll take a piece of meat, and they'll eat it, and then they have to take, they can take a piece of cheese and eat it later. Okay? But before they eat another piece of meat, what do they have to do? What do they have to do? They have to completely rinse out their mouth and then eat a piece of bread before they eat a piece of meat, so there won't be any cheese in their mouth at all to go along with them. And why did they do this? What's the story behind it all? But Steve, you remember the story?
Well, but I don't come to Leviticus.
Well, what is it?
Well, there's a passage that said not to boil a kid in its mother's milk.
What they did is these pagans would take a newborn child, newborn calf or goat, and they'd milk the mother, and they'd get enough milk together, and they would boil this animal in its mother's milk, which was, you know, you think about it, here the mother gave this birth to this child, and now you're going to take the milk that it's supposed to be eating, you're going to eat it, but you're going to boil the calf in it, and you're going to eat it. And that was a pagan practice. And God said, I don't want you doing that. So these, you know, everybody in the world is an extremist, don't we? We have two political poles today that are extreme. We have got your right wing extremist, and we got your left wing extremist. Far, far apart. Far, far apart. You know why? Because people can't come together. They won't come together. They want to be extremist. So what did these Jews say? Well, we're not going to drink milk. We're not going to eat cheese at the same meal. We can have milk for breakfast, but you're not going to have it for lunch. If you have milk for breakfast, you're going to have cheese for breakfast. You can't have any meat. You know what they give you over there in Israel? Huh? You know what they give you for breakfast? They'll give you cheese, and they'll give you a piece of fish. Okay? You can have fish and milk and fish and cheese, but no beef. No bacon for sure, you know. Of course, now, you know, there is beef bacon now, and there's turkey bacon and all that kind of stuff, so they can have that, you know. You can have bacon, kosher bacon. All right. What else? Go down to the Red Lobster. What do you see? Huh? What do you see at Red Lobster?
Shellfish.
Huh?
Shellfish.
All right. No lobster, no crawdad, no clam, no oyster can be eaten by a Jew. They don't eat that stuff. All right, they don't eat that at all. Your clam chowder, that's not kosher. All this, you don't eat that. All right. Now they find out way down the line here that these oysters, and you know what carries the most mercury and arsenic in it? Of all the what?
Oysters.
No.
Shellfish, yeah.
Big ones. Big ones. But what carries the most? Lobster. Because it lives to be 200 and 300 years old. Sometimes that's a great big one. Lobsters live a long, long time. And over that period of time, they can gather up a lot of mercury and arsenic in their system. Of course, we've polluted the oceans with it. The oceans are polluted. All right, well, God knew that a long time ago, so he told them, prohibit them from doing this. Okay? These are the things. Now, God had to completely re-educate Israel because they'd been down there running around these heathens all this time, and they wanted the heathen food. Now, here we have, they didn't want to trust God yet. They didn't want to trust God. God says, go out there and gather this manna, which was a miraculous food. It was available. Manna was there. It was there. There was natural manna. But it only came in seasons and only came in very short supply. But he said, I'm going to give it to you every day. I'm going to make sure there's plenty of it out there. But you have to go out there and pick it for 6 days. And on the sixth day, you just pick up twice as much as you're going to. And it's not going to rot. If they picked up too much on all those other days, it was going to rot. It was going to get maggots in it. But on the sixth day, it wouldn't get maggots in it. It's going to be okay. But you've got to trust me. Trust me. That's what they said. Trust me. Trust me that I'll take care of you tomorrow. The Feast of First Fruits. They went out there and the very first fruits that got ripe, they took them and they gave them to God. And prayed that there wouldn't be any hailstorms or anything else. God would take care of them. And by the way, most of that farming over there was what kind of farming?
Dry land
farming. So when you're dry land farming, you really got to trust the Lord. Irrigation, like in Egypt. Wait a minute now. See, they've been in Egypt where there's irrigated farming. But now they're going to go into the land of Israel where there's no irrigation, where they're going to have to totally trust God for all the rain and all the moisture and everything, for all of their crops, the tree crops, the orchards. They didn't have to plant them, did they? They didn't have to plant orchard one. And the grapevines, they didn't have to plant. How did the grapevines grow over there? You remember, I think I've shown you pictures over the years. How many of you, how did the grapevines grow, Brother Marilyn? On the ground. They just spread out on the ground. Why did they plant them on the ground? And not only they plant them on the ground, but you go out there and you see this terraced work. And around all this terrace, there's rocks piled. And they left some rocks in the field. Because rocks draw moisture in the night. If you go out there alongside of a road, in the mountains up here, even where it's so dry, around a rock you will see green. Because the rock's drawing moisture around it. So they let God naturally water those things. They leave some of the rocks in the field so it will, and they go out there and those vines just run on the ground. And they go out there and pick them up. Pick up the grapes. God would have these Canaanites plant all that food in the ground, in that land. He said, I'm going to go in there. And that all comes all the way from the book of Genesis where God said that he would do that. The Canaanites, when Noah cursed Ham's descendants, Canaan, his descendant, which probably, according to most rabbinical thinking, that was a product of Canaan and Noah, his mother, that child, Canaan, was the child of incest. Okay? 1627. Wahi. Bayom. Hashavi. Yatsiyu, that is, men. Ha'am. Lilakot. Wilo. Matsau. Wahi means, and he became. Third person, master, senior, cow, wow, consecutive, imperfect. What's he there? He became. What is this he that? Who is the he that became, Brother Roger? Sure?
The manna.
Because the manna is masculine. Remember, everything's masculine and feminine. In Greek, you have masculine, feminine, and neuter. In Greek, you have masculine and feminine. They didn't care about the neuter business. In day, bayom. Bayom. Now we have a preposition in front of the word day. The preposition in front of the word day. We have a prefix to this. A preposition. Prophecy. is a Greek word. Prophecy. Prophecy. Basically, if you want to prophecy, prophecy has a prefix on the front of that. What is that prefix? We use it in English. Pro and con. Pro means for or before. Okay? It means to say before. To say before. That's what prophecy means, to say before. So here we have a compound word, biome. All right? Biome. In day. All right? In day, hash shivi. Hash shivi. In the day, the seventh. Literally, you got a definite article on the front of this, don't we? You got a definite article on the front of it. In the day the seventh. And when the Hebrew puts a definite article in front of it, it means it's very important. It's very important. This day. It's not a day, but this day. Now, in Greek, there is no indefinite articles. There's no A's in Greek. And no ands in Greek. It's only the. And when it has a the there, that means it's very important. It's pointing like a sign pointing that direction. And right here, it says, in day the seventh, they had given out, literally third person construct pool, cal perfect, they had given out from the people to gather. Look at that. From man, here we have another preposition, man. And you can put that on the front of a word, and it means out of it, out of the house, out of the field, or whatever. Ha, ha'am, the people. What people? A definite people, okay? The people. And what does this word am mean here also? What does this word am?
Nation?
It can mean nation, but actually what it's talking about, what's it talking about? It's like tribe.
Family.
Thank you, Sharon. You got an A plus. Family. This is the family. It's not just people, but this is the family. God's family. Okay? And then Lilgot. When you see the word lamet, and lamet is a preposition, when you see a preposition in the front of a word, what do you automatically think, Brother Roger? What kind of verb could it be? Not so much cow. What kind?
Imperfect.
Huh?
Imperfect.
No.
No.
It is an infinitive.
Oh.
An infinitive. Okay. To do, to go, to run, to jump, to see. Okay? And here it is, to gather. All right? The root is lakat. All right? And we have a preposition in front of it which tells you that it is in the, basically, in an infinitive. And it's cal infinitive construct. All right? And there's also infinitive absolute. I know I don't mean to drop you off in the Hebrew grammar too deep. And then we have an adverb of negation with a conjunction on the front of it here next. What is a conjunction, Brother Roger?
Wa.
All right, wa. Page 253. See what I wrote down there, 253? If you go look that in Brown, Driver, Briggs, you'll look it up. And you'll see that wa in there. And that is a conjunction. Okay? And then we have lo, which is an adverb of negation. A not, a negative. All right. A not or a negative. We lo and not. They had found matzah. Matzah, not they had found. When you have matzah bread, what do you have? Matzah, huh? Bread means basically to find. To find. All right? They didn't find any leaven in it. All right? Not they had found. All right? Third person construct plural, cal perfect. Not they had found. They went out to gather and they didn't find any no manna. Manna. What does manna mean? It comes from ma. Ma is a interrogative. All right. What? Or what is it? Or who is it? Who is it? That means who is it? Who is it? Or what is it? That's what manna means. 1628. Wyomer. Hadabar. El Moshe. Ad. Ana. Mi Atam. Lishmor. Mitzowate. Wito Rote. All right. Wyomer. Decline that for me, somebody. It's right down there in front of you. I want you to decline it, though. Or conjugate it. That is, conjugate it. Conjugate that for me. What's it say?
Third person masculine.
Third person masculine singular. Well, consecutive and perfect. All right, I want you to remember now. I had all this down in front of you now, but I want you to be able to read this and see what it is. The well, consecutive and perfect. Well, consecutive and perfect. It means something like it's a completed action, okay? Like perfect, but it's not perfect because it's got an imperfect. It is a durative, linear period of time. While consecutive and perfect. And he said, and he had kept on saying. That's how you really get it in your English mind. And then we have the word Hadavar there. Hadavar. That's the word Jehovah. In Greek, what would you say here? Ho Logos. Because that's where Ho Logos came from right here. Alright. And then we have a preposition. In this case, preposition. And that's unto. Page 39, that preposition is. And he said Jehovah unto Moshe. Say Moshe. Moshe. Moshe, that's his real name, Moshe. It's not Moses, it's Moshe. What does Moses mean?
To draw out
or to rescue. Marilyn, you're doing pretty good. You get A+2. Odd. Now we have this little word odd. Odd is a preposition of time. You say, Moses, until when? Ad ana. Until when? How long? Mi antem. Ye have refused, violently refused. Israel violently disobeyed God. Violently. Israel violently disobeyed God. Second person, masculine, plural. You all. PL, perfect. You all have violently refused to keep watch. Look at that word. Lishmor. Say lishmor. Lishmor. Now that rolls the R on the end just like Spanish. Lishmor.
Lishmor.
Okay. Call infinitive constructs. See that word there in the front of that, brother? See that lament there? All right. Do you begin to understand this?
Yeah.
All right. The word ishamar, all right, that means to watch. But we have lishmar here. So that's an infinitive. It becomes an infinitive. And then mitzvate. Mitzvate. What word do you have in here? Mitzvate. My commandments, my orders, my edicts. And then vito rote. What do we have in this word? We have a modern Hebrew word out of here. My commandments and my laws. What is the law word for the law today?
Torah.
The word Torah comes right out of here. That's what it comes from, Torah. All right, 1629. By the way, Roger helped me to scribe this. He was a scribe, the Hebrew scribe here.
So fair.
Huh?
So fair.
So fair, yeah. The scribe. So fair. Ru. Ki. Hadavar. Natan. Lekem. Ha Shabbos. Al. Q. Natan. Lekem. Vayom. Hashishishi. All right. Hashishishi. Lachem, Yomayim, Shiva, Shivu, that is, Ish, Taktal, Al,
Yesi, Ish, Memikomo, Bayom, Hashavi. Masculine and plural. Now it doesn't say which person it is. Just masculine and plural. We don't have first person. We don't have second person. We don't have third person here. Masculine, plural. But the idea is all of you, each one of you, each one of you individually and as a whole, ye see, ye watch. Masculine, plural, caul imperative. Ye watch because we have this little conjunction here, key, it means because. Hadabar, say what it's supposed to be in Greek. Hologos. Get this, hologos. All right, this is hologos. All right, that I want you to understand that. If you understand that, you have understood a great biblical truth. Brother Steve.
How do you spell that?
Hologos?
Yeah.
H-O. Hologos.
Okay. Can you spell it for me in English?
Yeah. Ho. All right, now look at it in Greek. Our O comes from Greek, doesn't it?
Yes.
Just put an H on the front of it. Ho. Now, just put an L instead of that one. You don't have to change that one at all. That's O. And then you've got a G here. And then you've got an Omicron sigma, which is an OS.
So what's the Ho?
The Ho has got a rough breather over it. It's got an Omega. It's got an Omicron here. And that's a definite article. Ha is a definite article. In Hebrew, ha the bar, ha the bar, the word, and in Hebrew the Greek equivalent is hologos, the word, period. Okay, that's who we're talking about. We're talking about the pre-incarnate Christ that walked with Israel. When Israel appeared to them in His Shekinah glory or whatever, it was Jesus. All right, and it was His creative power. Because Jehovah, Hologos, He has given, third person, master, senior, cal, perfect, He has given, this is completed action. He's done it. To all of you, look at that. As a preposition with a suffix, to all of you, lekem, to all of you, to you all, hash. Say Hash Shabbat. What does Hash Shabbat mean? What does it literally mean? What does it mean? You remember Mike, Sharon? It means complete. Sabbath is it's full. It's finished. He's given you a day to be finished. To look back. When I was working on the website the last 6 weeks, the last week, I realized I had made 1,100 mistakes that I had to go back and fix. I focused on that only. Only. Then I married. I would not eat. I would not sleep until I got that done. Sunday, last Sunday, I worked 21 hours on it. The day before, I'd worked at least 18 to 20. The day after, I probably worked 20, 18 or 20 hours. I wouldn't even get up and go cook my food. I would just eat a peanut butter cracker and drink water and eat until I got it done. I was focused on it. Then I could look back and I say it's done. Because it wasn't finished. People could not use it, that site. The reason why they weren't using it is they couldn't find anything on it. It was all helter-skelter. So I had to go organize it. Now it's organized. Now they're finding all kinds of stuff and they're getting with it. They're having a ball. But I couldn't rest until it was done. I wanted to get that done. The Sabbath. Now I can look back upon it as completed. Everything else I put on there is something else. But the website's completed now. Upon, a little preposition. What would be the Greek equivalent of this word all there, Brother Roger? Page 153 and page 154 in your analytical Greek lexicon. What would it be? Anybody know? Marilyn? What would be upon in Greek? Upon. Huh? Epi. Upon. We got a word upon right out of epi, don't we? We got epi and we get hypo. These two words come right into Greek. Upon and below. Hypo under. Okay? Upon or above and below. Okay? Upon can thus. That little adjective there. And then he, we have a third person pronominal adjective, if you want to really carry it out. And what would be the equivalent in Hebrew of that one? I mean, not in Hebrew, but in Greek of that one. You Greek scholars?
Ho. Right?
No, not really. Ho is the. Alto. 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 Alto, altes, altos. Because you've got three. In Greek, Hebrew, you just got one. You've got this one third-person pronoun here, but in Greek, you've got hundreds of them. You've got eight cases in masculine, feminine, and neuter, in singular and plural. You got lots of them. But here, you've got one. See, that in Hebrew seems simple right there. That just makes it feel so simple when you don't have, let's see, 16, 3 times 16. That's a lot. That's how many you have in Greek.
48.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of pronouns in Greek. And then you have reflexive pronominal adjectives in Greek also. It's all complicated. In Greek, in Hebrew, you just got you. Masculine, feminine, neuter. And he is giving. All right, giving. Look at that word now. That's masculine singular. It's cal participle. It's a participle. And what is a participle? In English, what would that be? You English scholars, what has ing on the end of it? In English, what has ing on the end of it? Brother Mike, you know what that is? That's what you call a gerund. Running. Jumping. Reading. Stuff like that. In Greek and in Hebrew, it is a participle. It's a continuing thing. Running, jumping, reading, and here it is what? Giving. Giving. Natan. The word Nathan comes from this. The word Nathan comes from this word Natan. Nathan means what? One who gives or one who is given. Nathaniel. What does that mean? Nathaniel. That's right. Gift of God. Nathaniel, gift of God. You guys are getting sharp. To you, lekem. Now here we have a preposition with a suffix in that. And then bayom. Bayom is what? In day. Preposition on the front of day. And then ha shash shi. Hash shish shi. Hashishi. Say hashishi. Ha-shi-shi-shi. Ha-shi-shi-shi-shi. That sound like that school where you went there, Brother Mike? Little she-she's? All right. The sixth. We have a definite article on the front of that, don't we? The sixth. Food. Days. Dwelling. Look at that word. Shiva. Dwelling. Each man. Underneath. Ta-ta. Underneath. Not. Go out. Each man from his place. In day the seventh. In other words, you're supposed to stay. What is it saying? Is stay in your shelter. Now, all the time they were out in what we call the 40 years trek in the wilderness, what did they live in?
Lean-tos.
Lean-tos and tents. The Feast of Tabernacles. What does that mean? Huh? Sukkot. That means that they were supposed to remember the 40 years trek in the wilderness where God took care of them. And what do you have when you have this Feast of Tabernacles or Sukkot? What do you do? What do they do, the modern Jews?
Put up a temporary shelter where you can see through the sky.
Yeah, they put up a temporary shelter so you can see through the sky, up to the sky, so you can see the stars. But to remind them that they were out there in the wilderness for how many years? 40 years. Arabim, 40 years, okay? They were out there for 40 years, but what do they hang on this temporary shelter? All kinds of fruit. Dates, oranges, bananas, whatever they can grab a hold of, palm leaves, everything, whatever kind of fruit, ears of corn, basically now. They didn't have corn over there then, but they can hang an ear of corn over there. Or barley, any of these things, all the different kinds of citrus fruits and everything that they had in the land. They hang all this stuff all around their little temporary dwellings. And remember that God provided for them. That's what He did. And here they don't want to remember. They don't want to depend on God. I wonder if they just totally ignore all of their ignorance and arrogance and their disobedience. The Old Testament is a book of disobedience. The history of the disobedience of Israel. That's what it's about. It's not the obedience and the great glamour of the election of Israel. It's the book of the disobedience of Israel and all the curses that God would bring upon them.
Well, you have a word that's called laziness. I don't want to think.
Yeah.
It's also called children.
Yeah. The children of disobedience. 1630. Wayishbitu. Ha'am. Bayom. Hash Shavi. All right, that was a very short verse. And they ceased and they rested. Why yishibitu? And they ceased or they rested. See that word at the bottom of it? What's the root of that word, brother?
Shabbat.
What does that mean?
Sabbath.
They rested. Completed. They had completed their week's work. Now they sat back and look upon it. After I had finished all of that work and back-breaking, mind-boggling work to chase all those sermons down that were all scattered everywhere and put all of them in order, I got back and I looked at that and I pushed on there and it says series and it lined them all up. Hundreds of them in a line. And I said, it's done. Now I can rest. You know what I did today? I slept last night. I slept 8 hours last night. That's unusual for me. And today I took 1 hour nap. Boy, now that's unusual for me too. I just sit there. You know why? Because my work is done. I can rest in it. I got it done. Now I can rest. All right. And ceased and rested the people. Ha'am. And what does the word people there mean? What does that mean now? Family, tribe, relations, God's family. In days at seventh. All right, in day the seventh. There we get the word seventh. There we get the word Shavi. Seventh. 1631 now. 1631.
Wayikriu.
Beth.
Yisrael.
Et. Shimo. Man. Wihu. Kizera. God. Laban. Me, I'll get it right in a minute. Me to ma. Ketsa fi kichit. Okay, that TH, or that T on the end is actually a TH sound. Why is it a TH sound and not a T sound, Brother Roger?
No doggish.
Huh?
No doggish
in the middle of it. No doggish in the middle. If it had a doggish in the middle of it, it would be a T sound. Or if it had a teth at the end of it, it would be a hard T sound. Right here, it's a TH sound. Ki sa fe si fa fi cheth. And then vidavash. And they called. And kept on calling. Third person, masculine, plural, cow, vowel, consecutive, perfect. I want you to think about that, about conjugated all of these verbs. I want you to think about that. How is the action taking place? I've done 140 classes on Hebrew from the book of Genesis. And we've got here, I think, is the 49th class in Exodus. Now you're beginning to understand. Of course, Brother Mike, you just began. And here, Brother Steve, you just got in here. You're getting it thrown all up at you. See, I wasn't doing this to him a long time ago. Slowly I built up to this. Okay, slowly. You can't go to the unknown until you what? Until you understand the known. You have to stand on a rock before you can jump to another rock. Or else, I mean, how can you jump from quicksand onto a rock? You sink. So I've tried to give the students a foundation before we went on any further. Slowly, from one stone to the other. All right. They seized the people in the seventh. Now it says, and they called. They called and kept on calling. Wow, consecutive and perfect. See that? Say Cal. Cal. Wow, consecutive and perfect. All right. That comes from Korah. Korah means to call. Then they called and kept on calling. But it is a completed action because it's a wow stem. Wow, consecutive, perfect. Wow, consecutive, perfect is like future perfect. It's like future perfect. It's like something that is completed action in the future because God is looking in His prophetic mind. God has no problem with saying something as if it happened before it happened. Okay? Now, this wow, consecutive, and perfect, it simply says that it took place in the past. It's completed action, but it took a durative linear period of time to do it, like the imperfect. And the house, the Beth, the house of Israel. What does Israel mean? Pam, you've been awful quiet back here tonight. Man who wrestles with God. Thank you very much. You get A plus tonight too. Eth is what? That's a sign of the direct object. All right. What is the Greek sign of the direct object? Ace. All right. Shemo. Shemo means what?
Monument,
pillar, name, fame. What child in the Hebrew Bible was named after this word? Shem, which is the ancestor of all the Jewish people and a whole lot of the Arabs too. Okay. Shem, name, Shemo. Mana. What is it? By the word, that comes from Chaldee. The word mana comes from Chaldee. All right? That's a Chaldean word. And a Chaldean word is what kind of a word? Persian. It comes from Persian. A lot of the Hebrew alphabet and a whole lot of the Hebrew words comes from Chaldean, Persian, and Phoenician. And some of it even from Egyptian. We'll get into that a little later too. I'll just dump a little bit, and I'll dump some of these words on you little by little too. And he, or him, this manna, he, all right. We on the front of that is what? We, that reaping fork. What is that, Brother Otter?
And.
That's a conjunction. All right, page 253. And he. Kizera. What's Zera mean? What's Zera mean? Seed. Like seed. What is the Greek word for this? Spermatos. Spermatos, which we get a word sperm from. Seed. All right? Kizera, that is a little key in the front of it, that little key. Like this, right here. With a yod, cough with a yod, key. All right, that's what we. It's inflected in this word, like seed of God. God is a cilantro seed, or coriander seed, cilantro or coriander seed. This is what manna looked like, except it was sweet like honey, sweet like honey. And then Laban. Laban. What does Laban mean? Whose name in the Bible was Whitey? Whose name? Whose? Who?
Jacob's
father-in-law. And Jacob's father-in-law and Rachel's brother. All right. Huh? Rebecca was her. That was Rebecca's brother. Laban was. His name was Whitey. They think. Most of the biblical rabbinical scholars believe that Rebekah and Laban both had very red hair. When a person gets older, when you have red hair, what happens to your hair? It turns snow white. Snow white. And so Laban probably turned gray early, and they called him Whitey. Whitey was his name. And of course, Rebecca, when she had two boys, didn't she? And one of them's name was Harry. That was his name, Harry. And he had what kind of hair? He was red. Red hair. He was called Red Harry. Esau was red hair. Esau. Okay? Called Edom, which meant red also. So he was called Red and Harry. And so probably Rebecca had red hair, and Esau had red hair, and Laban probably had red hair. And you see some red-haired Jews every now and then. All right? Like a seed, a white. And taste of him. Taste of him. The taste of him. It has a suffix, a third person singular masculine. The taste of him, like flat cakes, like pancakes. The taste of this was like pancakes. How many of you like, remember when IHOP, it used to be International House of Pancakes? Boy, when I was young, and I could eat such things. I would like to go down to IHOP. Every now and then, I'd go down about once every two or three years. I'd go down to IHOP and I'd order some pancakes, and I'd take all of those different kinds of syrups, and I'd separate those pancakes, and I'd put blueberry over here and strawberry here and maple here and whatever else they had. I would put different kind of syrup on each pancake with real butter and put it on there, and boy, I'd have a ball. Now, every day, Israel had this. This is what they had. They had pancakes for breakfast every day. Because that's what it says. It looks like pancakes with honey. Pancakes dipped in honey. Bidabash. Bidabash. Dipped in honey. Pancakes dipped in honey. So every day, they were eating pancakes dipped in honey. Every day. I only got it once every two or three years. They have it every day. Let's have one more verse, and then we'll, if you have any questions, we'll look at them. Wayomer, Moshe, Zay, Hadabar, Asher, Siwa, Hadabar, Milo, Haomer, Mimmenu, Le Mishmeret, Mishmeret, Meret. It's TH on the end. All right. La Dora Tikem. Lemon. Yeru et Halikem. Asher. He e Kalti. Et Kem. Bob Midbar, Behotzi, Etkam, Me'eretz, Mitzrayim. All right. And he said, and he kept on saying, third person masculine, say it with me, third person masculine singular. Kal, wow, consecutive, imperfect. All right. It comes from Amer. See the root of it down there? That Amer. That Aleph, Mem, and Resh. That's the root of it. It's got a three-letter root. How many different kind of roots can you have in Hebrew? There are two-letter roots. There are three-letter roots. There are four-letter roots. And some, very rare, five-letter roots. Most Hebrew letter or words are three-letter roots. But we have two-letter, three-letter, four-letter, and five-letter roots in Hebrew. Okay? But most of them are three-letter roots. And said Moses this little demonstrative pronoun there, this, the word, Hadabar. Now see there, we have Hadabar, the word. That's literally the word. Words are the edicts of God, which he has commanded, third person masculine, singular, cal, or PL perfect. Look at that, PL stem means what? Brother Steve, you remember what PL means yet? P.O. means something violent force. The verb is constructed with violent force and aggression. He had commanded, perfect tense, Hadavar, which here is what? Ho Logos. Say Ho Logos. That's who it is. It's Ho Logos. In John 1 and 1, we meet him. NRK, Ain Ho Logos. In John 1 and 1. In beginning, kept on being the Word, the Jehovah. And then we will have a word here, Melo. Full, the Omer. The Omer is how much? How much is an Omer? It comes right over out of Hebrew. They didn't change the name of it. They just said Omer. Omer is 2 quarts. About 2 quarts. Okay? 2 quarts. Paid 771 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs there, by the way. From him. From him. Now this word here, Mem and Menu, it really means from to but divide him. They're going to divide him. And then we have the word Le Mishmeret. To guard. To guard. To preserve. To watch. For your generations. Alright? I want you to take 2 quarts of this. And for your generations to come, I want you to guard it. For your generations. For your family that's coming. For the purpose of and in order of that, Limon, that they may keep on seeing. Now read this with me down there below that. This conjugation of this verb. This verb is conjugated. Okay, this is what you call, say it's conjugated. You conjugate verbs and what do you do with nouns? You decline nouns. And by the way, the the Hebrew language has the genitive case, it has the oblative case, it has the nominative case, it has the accusative case. It has all these cases just like Greek does. But it's done with prepositions added to the words. Men on the front of a word means it's out of. Out of. That's the oblative. Genitive is a case of possession. The case of the nominative is a case of the subject. All right? So you have all this. That I'd go over your head with this? All right. That they may keep on seeing. Third person, masculine, plural, cal, imperfect. Imperfect tense, they shall keep on doing this forever. In John 1 and 1, it says, in RK ain. Ain is third person singular, imperfect, indicative, active from Amy. In the beginning singular, all the way back in period of time when nothing else existed but God, kept on being Ho Logos. And Ho Logos is Ha Dabar, which is translated Jehovah. And Jehovah kept on being an inseparable part of the Godhead. This is all John 1 and 1, because he kept on being God. Because the Word, Jehovah, kept on being God. When Jesus Christ, as Jehovah in the flesh, came to earth, he didn't cease being God. He kept on being Jehovah. But now he was related to man. He was God and man. That you may keep on seeing the bread. The bread, the food. Which? Asher. That's a relative particle or the particle of relation. Okay? Which? I have cause to eat. First person, construct, singular, hithel, perfect. Which I have cause to eat, all of you. In Ba Midbar. What's Ba Midbar? Ba is, that's a preposition. Ba Midbar. So what do we have here? We have something in the locative case. In the locative case now. And see there, we're getting real deep with this stuff. See? You get this stuff, Roger? All right. What are the 8 Greek cases? Nominative, genitive, oblative, locative, instrumental, dative, accusative, and vocative. And we're bringing that over into Hebrew now, little by little. Little by little. So now, it's in the locative case. And where is it in the locative case? Ba Midbar. In the wilderness. What does wilderness mean? What does it mean? What is it?
Cow trail.
A cow trail. Out there to where you need to have a guide. If you don't have a guide, your cow's going to starve to death. Like when J.J. Lopez went over there and took all those sheep from the Dawn Ranch and went all the way up into Montana and Wyoming with them up there. He had to have a guide, and they hired a fake. And they almost died over there by Fish Lake Valley, where I used to live. They almost starved to death over there and died of thirst. a trackless cattle trail to bring you out. I brought you out. Now here it is. We have the suffix is first person continent senior. To bring you out, all of you, from the land. Look at that word there. Now we have mer eretz. What case is that in? I mean, not what case, but what how do you decline this one? It's from. Okay, so what is that? That's the oblative case. The oblative case. Nominative, genitive, oblative, locative, instrumental, dative, accusative, vocative. All right, there you have the oblative case from the land. From the land of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim. What's Mitzrayim mean? What? But what does it mean, literally? The land of red mud and canal banks, because it was irrigated land and it was a lot of red mud and a lot of red land there, like Oklahoma, like Paul's Valley, that red land back there. Go back there, you see that ground. Some of that round ground is just as red as it can be. Red ground. Red like the red man. All right. Have any questions? Any questions? Brother Mike, you got any questions? Is this pretty... Are you getting into the language just a little bit? It is deep. See, I don't really thrash you with grammar a lot of times. I used to have to teach this stuff all the time. Through the whole class, I taught grammar. But today, you got Bible and you got grammar. Where did we begin tonight? What verse? 16:27 to 16:32. 16:27 to 16:32. You know what? Studying the Bible and grammar, it's a little more palatable. A little bit more palatable. You can stand it just a little better. Brother Mike, have you learned anything out of this?
Absolutely.
I mean, we pouring a lot on you at once. You didn't come with us all the way through.
Well, what I'm able to do is take notes of things that I need to go find out myself.
All right.
And that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I've always, when I tried to teach the Greek and Hebrew, I mean, I tell you, you cannot understand Hebrew unless you understand Greek. You can't understand Greek unless you understand Hebrew. Because the languages are extremely interlaced in the Old and the New Testament. It's extremely interlaced. And so, now as we come along here, we're going to learn some really neat things in the law. And in the laws that God is laying down to these people, we're going to really learn some really neat things. Brother Roger, do you have any questions?
My head just swims at this point.
But you see now.
Yeah.
Are you beginning to understand? Are you beginning to understand how big the language is? It's a big language. It's not as big as Greek by any means. Pamela, how about you? You got any questions tonight?
The eight cases,
yes.
So we
can bring some of those eight cases into the Hebrew. The Hebrew has a locative. It's got an instrumental. It's got a dative. Okay. Here we have we have the case of nominative case as a subject. Genitive case, definitely have a genitive case. We have an oblative case. We have a locative case. We have an instrumental case. We've got a dative case. All right. We got an accusative case, don't we? So we have at least seven cases of the eight cases, and do we have a vocative case? To some extent. All right. Now, Sanskrit had eight cases. The Greek language is an evolution of the most fantastic language in the history of mankind. And God allowed and formed that language like that. It was formed over millennia. It went from the dialects into the classical, from the classical into Koine, and then it evolved downhill from there into the Byzantine and then into the modern Greek. And the Hebrew did the same thing. And we're going to, as we go along, we will see the different Hebrew roots, and I'm going to bring out from like Gesenius' grammar here, I'm going to show you what words came from Phoenician. What words came from Babylonia? All of these different ones. All right. We're all of this came from. We'll look at it little by little. You'll understand it better, maybe. All right. Do we have any other words? No other questions? All right. I'm going to turn you loose on the world. Let's have somebody come up here and dismiss us in prayer. All right, Brother Roger. I would like for you, as you come up here and dismiss us in prayer, I would like you to tell the whole world out there what you have learned in these two, in these three classes.
I've been challenged to stretch my mind around several different languages, and I've been encouraged to do that by your method of teaching, and I've been excited to learn more about the Bible as I go along. That's where I'm at with it.
That's where you are. And he's also he's become my scribe in Hebrew.
Yeah.
And you learned how to write. You're learning how to write the language.
Right.
Yeah. And it means a lot. You really want to know all the scribal problems they had in the past? You should go start scribing. I have written the whole New Testament. I made a lot of mistakes. As you read Hebrew, no matter how much you look at it, you have to have somebody else look at it. Go back and look at it also. That's how they made mistakes. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this little story as you're up here. This is, stay right here. The Jews talk about how that they used to guard the Bible, how that it had to be certified and all of this stuff. When did all this certification begin, brother?
It was rabbinic.
For the rabbinical schools out of Tiberias, 1000 AD. From there on, they really guarded them. But that text that they have there, most of the Hebrew scholars said that was no better than Textus Cephalus in Greek. And we do have the whole Bible now from Hebrew. But why don't those Jews turn it loose? Think about that for a minute as you go out. Go ahead, brother.
Father, thank you for bringing us together one more time so we can study your word. Happily, I try to take it in and apply it in my life in ways that I haven't stretched my imagination around it before. I appreciate your guidance and your outlining the way that I can please you. Please guide us and direct us in all things in our life. Thank you for all you've done for us. Be with us as we leave here in our activities. Be with those who couldn't be here for other reasons. I ask all these things in your name. Amen.
Amen. See if you can gather in the sheep.